proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Good evening, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hallelujah.
I'm here with my brewing compatriots, my Cajun brother, Johnny Plisse.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
California Homebrew of the Year. And you did pretty damn well in the Nationals, too.
As did you.
Kicking some ass, taking some names.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive range of awards there.
The good news about those beers is they were my most recent brews.
That is good news.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's the good news.
Yeah.
Only one was over a year old.
Because otherwise, you know, you think, well, maybe I'm not going in the right direction, you know,
if
you know.
Your brewing's going downhill.
Exactly. Like mine. Like mine is.
Yeah.
Mine's going downhill.
I saw you swept the sour ales.
Yeah, I think there were three entries. I had five entries, and out of the three.
Hmm.
And somehow I swept the category.
It's competitive.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, no. I think there was at least one other brewer, and yeah, somehow I swept that category.
Well, there's a lot of Jay-Z in that category.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Hmm. Yeah. And I think my beers were pretty good in that category. Mm. At least one of them I thought was well worthy, and the others were acceptable.
Okay.
Great. Yeah. Again, it was a lightly entered category. I think there were maybe eight entries in that category.
Wow.
So, you know, my three did well.
Okay.
You know, the eight entries.
What about your recent brews? Did any of those place? Or?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which ones?
I can't recall.
Okay. Well, you had a few, so it's okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know. Some of them did well. The oldest ones that did well were the Bock beers.
Oh, sure.
They had like a ice Bock and a traditional Bock, and both are like, you know, 4 or 5 years old or whatever. Yeah, they've been sitting around. I'm like, hey, I'll enter them or I'll throw them away, and they did well. So, you know, they did all right, and you know. I'm looking forward to second round of the Nationals, going out to Denver.
It's a close call.
Yeah, we'll be out there. Doe's did well.
Yeah, we did. We did. Yeah. They stepped up.
Quite a respectable showing around this area.
Oh, yeah. St. Paul and Quaff, though. Look out.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of points there going on.
Oh, my God.
The Homebrew Club of the Year is what we're talking about National Homebrew Competition. And if you go out to beertown.org, they have the whole thing on the conference. You go out to the conference. I tell you, somebody was on one of the forums asking, what would you go to, the NHC, the National Homebrew Conference, or the GABF, the Great American Beer Festival? Great American Beer Festival is nice, and if you've never been, you know, you'd want to go once. But if I had to choose between the two, I'd always go to the NHC because there's, you know, as many great beers there. Well, maybe not as many, but there's more than you can drink, great beers that you can drink there. Plus, you know, foods and, you know, all the club members and the sessions
homebrews
and stuff. Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely one of the greatest times of my life. Since I went to my first one, I haven't missed one ever since.
How many years now?
I don't know. The first one was in Texas, where the More Beer guys...
That was 6 years ago.
Yeah, took us out on a little excursion there, and for some reason they picked up my tab, too.
Huh.
Or, you know, at least you know, part of my tab, and, you know, it was great.
Just half of it, yeah.
They paid for, like, the flight and the conference, and, you know, it was, it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It was very generous of them. I was very touched.
And then the year after, I think you won an Ninkasi. Or 2 years after?
A couple of years after. I don't know. But in Texas, that was the first time I won a medal in the second round. And
that's when you got the bug.
All my Quaff brothers and sisters there with me. Oh, it was incredible. It was just the most wonderful feeling. I loved it.
Was that the first or second year your Quaff Club won? I think it was the second, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's been 6 years now.
I don't really pay attention. I mean, you know, it's cool, but it really isn't that critical to anything. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun, and you know, we take a lot of pride in it, but it's not really, you know, that important.
You just have a lot of great brewers. That's what
That's really cool. Well, Doze does too. Doze did really well.
Oh, yeah.
Really
Doze
well.
Did very well.
Glad to see my Doze brothers and sisters doing well. Yeah, you know, the other day, I was thinking, you know, I must be Scottish.
Yeah, because of your...
Because of my last name. Yeah. No, McZanishev.
McZanishev, okay.
No, I swear I must be Scottish. Okay, so I really love Scottish ales. And at the Mayfair, I entered the Mayfair this year, which I hadn't for a couple of years, but I went ahead and entered this year.
Good for
you. I swept the Scottish ales category.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really love those Scottish ales. Mm. And I've been to Scotland. I really love Scotland. I really enjoy that. I even enjoy haggis. I love deep fried foods. You know,
yeah.
You know, deep fry a monkey. I'd eat it. Mm. You know, that's Greece. The place where they deep fry, like, you know, candy bars and stuff.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I actually have a little deep fryer. You know, the other night I was deep frying some wings. You know, just great. So deep fried foods. I really find women with the,
with grease all over them?
With the light complexion, the red hair, right. You know. I find that quite attractive,
that's
you know.
Hot.
I tell you, I'm Scottish. I gotta be.
You gotta be.
You know, I would enjoy wearing the kilt, where, you know, with, you know, commando style.
I hope you do a show in a kilt.
Where I get the nice breeze going, mm-hmm. You know. I could do that.
You could probably use a kilt right now, huh?
Oh yeah, it's a little hot and sweaty in here. I'm getting the sweaty going.
The sweaty balls.
Yeah, yeah. But I could use the kilt, you know.
Yeah.
And it'd be a little disgusting for you because you're sitting right across from me, and you'd see there
your balls all day. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, I think I'm Scottish.
So what am I?
I think you're Cajun.
I'm Cajun.
Joy, please say.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to brew a Cajun beer.
Hey, plissé is like a kind of Frenchish, isn't it? Is it some sort of French?
It's Frenchish.
It's got some sort of French and Cajun.
Yeah. Hey, Freedom
Fries. Has a French thing going on, you know? It's like a Cajun has some sort of French roots in there.
Yeah. That's about as French as I get, though.
That is French as you get.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Cool. So what were we talking about? Were we talking about beer? We were talking about the NHC.
Yeah.
And
how glorious of an opportunity is if you can go. And it's beautiful.
Right.
Great brewers.
Oh, and it's the most wonderful time. I just love that conference.
There's something really good to this rhyme. 500 homebrewers in one room. What do you think? That's pretty good, right?
Is that a rhyme?
That's a rhyme right there. Something like that.
Hey,
that makes you want to go, though.
The chat... Sean Haggerty started, but everyone wants to congratulate both of you guys. 16 going forward for Jamil and 8 going forward for John in the first round. So everyone says that's amazing and good work.
Huh? So, thank you very much.
Lots of congrats coming through.
We
just won. That's all we want.
As long as there's one win in the second round, that's all it takes. One third place, I'd be happy.
Yeah.
I just don't want to get shut out. I
$800
want to keep the streak going.
Entry fee later.
I want to keep the streak going, betcha. Yep. Mm. Well, and, you know, by popular demand, we've enjoyed a few beers before the show. At least I have, you know. There's that bomber, arrogant bastard. Knocked
did,
out.
Did you kill that?
Well,
you and JC did. Not
yeah. And then a pint of your really nice Munich Helles there. Really good, too.
Thank you.
Now, who won the specialty beer category in this area?
Eric Igard from Doze got a first, Eric Beer got a third.
Yeah, Eric Beer did quite well.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He's up and coming.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, look out.
Yeah. So
Dan Sherman, too, ex-Quaff member.
Uh-huh.
Now
Dozer. Dan, come up. Yeah.
He's a great brewer. He's a national judge, huh? Or certified or something. I don't know. He knows his stuff, anyways.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, if he's from Quaff, of course he knows what he's doing.
My bad.
Absolutely. So, what was the first place specialty beer? Because we're talking about specialty beers today.
It was a Belgian dark strong spiked with Brett.
Interesting.
I believe, yeah. No, and he used a root of some sort. I don't remember what it was called, though.
He dangled his root in there?
He dangled his root in there.
He dry-rooted the beer?
He used some adjunct of some sort that he added to the boil.
He put his junk in there?
He put his junk in there, yeah. Had some little tang to it, you know.
Put his tangy root in the beer. Cool.
It's pretty good. It's fun to see a guy that's been only brewing for like 8 months, 12 months, and
wow,
just going nuts with All Grain, you know.
Fantastic.
It's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we're going to talk about specialty beer. You want to give us a rundown of what the specialty beer style includes?
Well, this is by far the most challenging one to to prepare for.
Uh-huh.
All I can say, it's unusual.
Uh-huh.
It's unusual,
mm-hmm.
And it's very, very unusual beer.
No.
There's more. There's unusual techniques involved. There is mm-hmm. different.
There can be.
You could think of a different yeast strain for a different style, maybe a mm-hmm. Kolsch for a brown or something.
Mm-hmm.
Different types of household adjuncts. I mean, stuff that you might find in your kitchen mm-hmm. that you add to your beer.
Right.
Cereal or, you know, mm-hmm. oatmeal. Maybe a combination of styles. You could cross a lager, maybe use a lager yeast for a double IPA.
Sure.
I mean, that's how.
Like a dark IPA. How about that? Like, you know,
there you
could
go.
Add some chocolate malt and IPA and make make it a little dark. And
what about like a dark lager or like a Czech lager or something dark? But that would be a Schwarz beer then, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
pretty close.
Although, the question is whether Czech dark lagers fit in the Schwarz beer category or not, or whether they're separate.
Right now,
they're separate.
Okay.
But, I don't know. A lot of those, I think, would be great Schwarz beer. Maybe a little bit hoppy sometimes.
Okay. Right.
And, that would technically, I think, fall in the specialty category right now.
But specialty ales more mm-hmm. beers that don't fit in the style guideline,
right?
That they would actually be in the specialty category because mm-hmm. they're not into the guidelines. They don't fit in there.
Well, they don't need to be really totally weird. They could be historic beers too. So,
like that Sacred Herbal of Brewing book, with they use like roots or something, or
well,
heather tips.
Jeff at Golden City, Colorado, when we were out there for the GABF, he had us taste a. GOSE. It's a beer made with like salt and coriander. It's like a German beer style.
Whoa!
And he had brewed one, mm-hmm. and this is like a historic beer that you just don't even hear about. And there's it doesn't fit anywhere else in the style guide. And he brewed one. It was actually quite good. And so that would be something that would fit in here. If you're trying to mimic a commercial example of a beer. Let's say you were trying to make, somebody was trying to make a, I can't think of one. You're trying to mimic some beer, some odd beer that some brewery brews that doesn't fit in any style.
What about like?
And it's a well-known beer and you're trying to mimic it, clone it. That would be, in this.
What about like a rye IPA? That would be a little weird.
Maybe a rye IPA would fit in there. It depends how much rye flavor there is.
Oh, okay.
Because if there's just a little bit, then it still fits in the IPA category. And also, it can be a combination of things. It can be, you're adding fruit and chocolate, and you're adding, a combination of things that kind of knocks it out of the spice or vegetable category, or knocks it out of the fruit beer category.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, if you add, like, fruits and spices, then it tends to not be in either of those categories anymore. It tends to fall into the specialty beer. And that's the kind of the recipe we're going to go over tonight.
Okay.
It's for a chocolate stout with cherries in it.
Mmm. Sounds good.
So it's actually a pretty good beer. All right. So when we come back from the break, short break, we'll kind of get into that recipe.
Cheers.
Is the Jameel Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking about specialty beer.
Special.
Exactly. Not the special that rides on the short bus. the special that makes it, you know, an unusual beer, like John was saying.
Right. Very unusual.
Something that doesn't fit, you know, kind of the typical categories. Or, you know, it may be beers have been brewed for a long time, but, you know, they're not in the style guide, so they fall under specialty, like that salt and coriander beer I was telling you about. It actually tasted pretty good. I got a commercial example of that from Germany. I'm kind of off track again.
Yeah, yeah.
And from Germany. I got it shipped out from Germany. I'm going to take it out there, and Jeff and I are going to give it a try alongside his beer there when I go for the conference for the NHC.
Nice.
I tell you, if you have a chance at NHC, go.
Yeah.
You know, we'll all be out. John will be out there. Justin will be out there. I'll be out there.
Go for the beer, at least.
Going to be fantastic, yeah. Mm. And if you happen to see us and you don't want to spit on us, at least say hi.
We'll spit on ourselves.
You spit on Justin.
Yeah.
He's used to it.
I've been spit on, too.
On purpose? Kinky stuff.
Yeah.
Ooh.
All right, back to beer.
All right, back to beer. All right, so specialty beer. The real key to brewing a specialty beer is that in any of these things, you were talking about unusual ingredients, right? The thing is, it still needs to be a good beer. So if you want to add, you know, cherries and chocolate to a beer, it must be, you know, in this case, a cherry chocolate stout. It must be a good stout to start with.
Right.
If it's not, you can't fix it up by throwing a bunch of other crap in it. It doesn't make a good specialty beer.
Right.
You know, you can't take your failures and turn them into great specialty beers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might mask some stuff and maybe it turns out okay, but it'll never be a great specialty beer. A great specialty beer is designed from the beginning to be a great specialty beer.
Have a great base beer. You preached
exactly.
That. You preached that from the beginning.
Well, when we're talking about fruit beers, same thing. You're saying,
yeah.
You know, I don't taste a lot of great fruit beers. You know,
they're trying to fix
crappy.
It with the fruit.
Exactly. They're trying to hide stuff. It's like, you know, design it from the very beginning.
Right.
And one of the things you generally need to do with any of the beers where you're adding, where you're trying to make them like a dessert. In this case, we're trying to make this beer like a dessert, and that's one of the things, you know. If you're not cloning a historic style and you're trying to make something that's, you know, got all these, you know, cherries and chocolate in it, you're trying to, in this case, mimic like a Black Forest cake. You know, Black Forest cake, it has like a chocolate cake and it's got cherries and, you know, and you're trying to mimic those flavors. And what is it about desserts that you could say about all desserts generally?
They're balanced.
They tend to be sweet too, right?
Well, that, yeah,
right.
True, but...
So... One of the things you need to do when you're making one of those kinds of beers where you want the drinker to think of these desserts is make them a little bit sweeter. So you back off on your IBUs. If you have a good foreign extra stout recipe, let's say, and you're going to use that as the base beer for this you know, chocolate cherry stout, and you're in like 45 IBUs, maybe you cut that down to like, you know, 35,
okay.
You know, and, you know, you go with that. You know, you kind of knock a few IBUs off. Generally, 10 to 20% fewer IBUs in a style.
Is that because they clash with adjunct additions? I mean, do they take away from fruit or?
It tends to cut that sweetness.
Oh,
and you want a little bit of sweetness in there.
Right.
Not a lot of sweetness. You know, it's a balancing act. You still want it to taste like a beer. If you get rid of all the bittering, it's not going to taste like a beer. You know, so you have to be careful. You know, it's kind of balancing. Again, you know, 10 to 20% tends to be about right on all the beers.
Okay.
There are some that won't. Like IPA, if you try and add fruit to an IPA,
it
doesn't work.
Right.
You know, like we talked about that too, the pineapple IPA.
Yeah.
Really doesn't work.
Because,
you know, the bittering and all that, you need to pick styles that are more balanced and then knock them down 10 to 20% on the bittering. And then you can add, you know, your fruits, your chocolates, your things like that.
Now, do you recommend that for all, like, styles other than a stout? I mean, if you wanted to do, like, I don't know, a cannabis lager of some sort.
Right.
And you would you back off your...
That would be an herb beer, I think.
An herb beer, okay.
Yeah.
Or,
But, you know, kind of the same thing. But, you know, in that case, I don't think, you know, I don't think I would make an adjustment just because... you know, it depends on the spice that you're adding and the herb that you're adding. Sometimes you want, it depends on what you're trying to mimic.
Okay.
Because one of the things I suggest is if you're starting, you know, with a concept, and on most of these beers, I like to look towards foods.
Hmm.
You know, if you look towards, you know, like you're trying to make an apricot pie, you know, what beer gives you some of those, you know, pie type flavors, those, you know, toasty, you know, weedy type right. of flavors that the crust has.
Right.
A little bit of sweet, that's slightly sweet, and then, you know, some apricot flavor in there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you go with like an apricot, you know, American wheat.
Yeah, right.
You know, make okay. it a little sweet. You know, something like that. So,
but apricot Kolsch.
Right. So if you have like a cannabis lager, it's like, well, I think that kind of goes off in a different direction.
Okay.
You know, that's along the spiced type of beers.
So if I want to add rocks to my beer, would right. I reduce my bittering hop by 20-25%? Or
no, I don't think so. Although, if you're making like a Stein beer, which okay. is where they heat up the rocks and they add it to the wort, and it's kind of uh-huh. like an Oktoberfest made with the heat, by heating up rocks and using that to do the mash and to boil.
The right. step mash, okay.
The rocks get caramelized.
Oh.
And then, so it adds some caramelly flavors to it and kind of, you know, sweetens up the beer a little bit.
And that transfers to the boil.
So if you're trying to do that without the rocks, then, you know, maybe you'd sweeten it up or add a little more crystal malt or something. Mm. So, yeah, you know, just keep in mind that those things are in there and what your final balance is going to be.
But balance is definitely the key.
Absolutely, right. And sometimes you need a sweeter balance, or sometimes you need a drier, mm-hmm. You know, a hoppier balance. And in this case, since we're making kind of a dessert type beer, mm-hmm. we're going to want a little sweeter.
I know a lot of homebrewers that start out homebrewing, that the novelty of like I can add anything to this, mm-hmm. and I can make something like beer. Mm-hmm. They go crazy. They just go through their kitchen and they start adding stuff.
Yeah,
I mean
exactly.
they're making
yeah,
beer,
yeah.
but they're not making. They're probably not making the best beer, but
right.
that freedom is great.
Right. To have. No, that's an excellent point. Yeah, the you know those new brewers, you know, they're unconstrained by, you know, the whole style thing, which is good. You know, you don't have to brew to style. It's understanding the styles I think helps, but you don't necessarily have to do it. It's you know, you just enjoy what you're doing and
brew beer.
You know, yeah. And if you want to throw weird things in there, you know, definitely go ahead. But you know, again, the best specialty beer is going to be, you know, designed. You know, it's going to be, you know, planned out. Mm-hmm. It's going to be brewed multiple times until you get things quite right. You know, just exactly as you need them to be.
And you probably have to with this type of beer, or this category at least.
Yeah, and you know, one of the real tricks on this is getting the right cherry character. The cocoa is really easy. You can buy a half-pound can of a Hershey's cocoa powder, not the sweetened kind, the unsweetened baking kind of cocoa powder. And I use Hershey's because it has the least amount of fat in it, and it's got a really nice flavor to it.
Why do you focus on the fat? I mean, does that
well,
affect?
The fat affects, you know, the head retention, things like that.
Okay.
You know, I think most of them are okay.
Right.
Really not a big deal. I've heard people say, oh, use the Dutch chocolate. And this was, I was told when I started out, use Dutch chocolate. And the problem with the Dutch chocolate is they do some sort of alkaline type of thing to it. I can't really remember, but it's slightly more bitter. And I don't know, it's and they're like, oh, you know, it's much more flavorful and aromatic. No.
Yeah.
No. Good old Hershey's, you know, go with that.
Unsweetened.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You can get it almost anywhere. Any grocery store mm-hmm. tends to have it. And you use like a full can for every, you know, 5-gallon batch.
Okay.
It makes it like a chocolate sludge
so
in the beer.
Is your hazelnut porter that Morbier sells a specialty beer?
No, it isn't.
Why not?
It used to be.
Why is it not now?
The style guides, currently, what they include the use of nuts in the spice herb vegetable. So chocolate and nuts.
The spice beer.
Would be a spice beer.
No way.
Yes. Yes, way.
Way.
Yes. And so, so it actually falls in that.
Fair enough.
So,
it's good beer.
Yeah, and that falls in the spice herb vegetable. So a lot of these beers that used to be entered as specialty now fall in the spice herb vegetable.
Okay.
They've broadened that category and more narrowly defined this one. So generally, it's when you have fruit and a spice or herb or vegetable together.
Okay.
It ends up in this category now.
Okay.
Other than the historic and, you know,
right.
things like that. So the chocolate sludge. Yeah, in the chocolate hazelnut porter, we use that chocolate as well.
I just thought I should let you know that I always tell customers that if you want to brew a great porter, right. don't add the hazelnut. Or right. the chocolate, for that matter.
Right, right.
Yes.
It'll turn out to be a great porter. Exactly. Yeah. You, and that's an excellent point. You want to start out with a base beer that is an excellent example of style. You know, adjust it a little bit for, you know, bitterness, and then, you know, go for it from there. And you might tweak things up or down a little bit here or there, but generally that gets you right in the ballpark. And if it doesn't taste like a good beer, then, you know, forget the specialty editions. It's not going to be that great. But the tricky thing on this, so the chocolate's easy.
You
dump it in at the last minute of the boil, and it kind of gets dispersed throughout the wort. You ferment it, and then you want to leave that chocolate sludge in there as long as possible. Let the beer sit on the chocolate sludge. If you rack it to get off the yeast, take a bunch of that chocolate sludge with you. You know, you want the longer the alcohol in the beer contacts the chocolate sludge, the better chocolate flavor and aroma you'll get.
Why is that?
The alcohol apparently extracts it. I would think you'd get it just from the heating and the wort and water.
Right.
And
dissolving
in. Well, and you know, that, you know, logic would tell me that, but experience tells me that it must have something to do with the alcohol. They're just long contact times.
Now, I assume the powder, is it fermentable?
There is some natural sugar to it, I think. I don't know. It adds some tiny amount of fermentability.
Right.
You know, a small amount. But the real tricky thing on this is cherry.
Okay.
Anything with cherry is actually quite tricky.
Raw cherries or a concentrate?
Any kind of cherries.
Any
kind. Because the problem with cherries is, if you get enough cherry flavor in there, it tastes like cherry cough syrup, especially the cherry extracts.
Yeah, you don't want NyQuil in the beer.
Right, right. It tastes like cough syrup. The extract... The cherry extract is
horrible.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so bad.
Exactly.
It's so bad.
Right. And we were talking like the last show or two about products you wouldn't carry.
Cherry extract
right there. You know, if you use a very slight amount, maybe that would be okay.
Yeah.
But what I like to do, and the problem with you know, regular cherries is the cherries, at least in the United States, are all grown for generally for sweetness and like a mild flavor and all that. And they're not good, you know, brewing cherries like the Charbiques and the sour. There's a couple others that are used. Yeah, you know, you might use more like pie cherries for that. But what I like to use, I like the Oregon fruit products in the can. You know, they separate out all the seeds and stuff, and it's
that's,
you know,
a puree, like concentrated, right?
Yeah, the puree. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Any of their products are fantastic for that. And I'll use the cherry for this beer, and if that doesn't turn out to be enough, I'll use like 2 cans in 5 gallons.
Yeah, I think it's a 3-pound container is good.
Right.
It's for three gallons, right?
Just a touch over, 3 pounds.
Yeah.
So you use like 2 cans because
for 5 gallons.
Again, this is a dark beer.
Right.
This is kind of a beer with robust flavors, so you actually need to use a little bit more fruit in something like this. If you were doing the same thing, if you're making a cherry chocolate cream ale or lager or Hefeweizen, which would be really disgusting, you would use probably half as much fruit because you have to overcome that steep hill of the roasted and all those flavors in there, and it's going to take a lot of fruit flavor to overcome that. So I'm going to use like 6 pounds of cherries in a 5-gallon batch.
And when are you adding this?
Secondary. This is the only time I really do secondary.
Oh.
So that, and if the cherry flavor isn't quite enough at the end,
after
fermentation, you're in the keg, or, you know, you're ready to put in your bottling bucket, and you taste it, and you go, God, I can't really taste the cherries, or, you know, I kind of taste cherries in there, but it's kind of muddled with the background. One little trick here is to take, like, some acid blend, and add just a tiny bit of acid blend to sharpen up the flavors. Because most fruit flavors, we tend to identify fruit flavors when they have kind of a more acid type of character.
Right.
Most of the fruits actually have quite a bit of acidity to
them. Makes it brighter.
Right. Yeah. And it makes it brighter, like you're saying, and kind of lifts that flavor out. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, yeah, cherries. Hmm. So you might try that.
It's almost like a wine.
Sometimes
you add acid to give the aromatics will come out more.
Right.
You know?
And it just across the palate, it really livens things up.
Is that pH?
Yeah, I mean, having a little bit of tartness to it, you know, that we tend to identify as fruity, I think.
But if you're I mean, you have dark malts now in your beer, mm-hmm. and those tend to lower pH, right?
Right, right. The same, now, same sort of thing as the acid does.
So if you're adding the fruit, mm-hmm. and they're getting in there, now if you're
right,
adding a little bit of acid.
The fruit tends to have acid to it, and some fruits are very acid.
So it's all this balance going on.
Right.
Acid.
Sometimes it may not be enough, you know, and so that's why you want to add just a touch acid of maybe an acid blend to it. Just, you know, very subtle, you know, be careful. And, gently ramp that up and see if that doesn't do it. The other thing you can do is, as a touch, just a slight bit of cherry extract you can add. If you really show restraint, I wouldn't add more than, say, maybe like a half ounce of cherry extract in a 5-gallon batch of beer.
Yeah, that's more than enough.
Yeah, that's probably
don't
plenty.
Even add it.
Right.
Ugh.
Half ounce, quarter ounce, just enough to kind of add a little aromatic cherry note, because
right,
the thing about that cherry extract, it adds a lot of aroma. Mm. If you're lacking aroma, you know, you add it with an eyedropper, not with pouring. You add it with an eyedropper, and you know, get yourself a measure out a certain portion of beer, and put a drop in of the extract, mm. swirl it, smell it, and you know, if a drop is enough, then you kind of, you know, yeah, you calculate up from there, add like 3/4 of that amount to your entire batch.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, you just a tiny bit. And so that's if it's lacking like aroma. If it's lacking, you know, flavor, cherry flavor, I'd try the acid first.
Okay. Because that will open it up a little bit more for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you're saying, on wines and stuff, tends to do some interesting stuff there.
Now, is that canned puree? That's pasteurized, right?
Yeah, you can add
so
it.
You can
right.
add it directly.
Exactly. Okay. You were asking when I would add it. So this is the only time on fruit beers and stuff like this, the only time I do secondary. So I would let this ferment out until it's just about done, and then I would rack that to a secondary container on top of the fruit.
Okay. And there's a letter ferment.
Exactly, and it'll finish fermenting that the fruit sugars. All right, so we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll get into the guts of the recipe and specialty beer. Talking specialty beers here, and we got a recipe for a cherry chocolate stout. This is kind of based off of a foreign extra stout recipe. And actually, I did well with my foreign extra stout this year.
Yeah.
I think it's a place somewhere.
Second or a third?
Or? I don't know.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah. Second or maybe first? I don't know. No.
It's in there. I know that.
Yeah.
But foreign extra stouts, they tend to be pretty robust and and astringent, right? And not astringent, but there's a fair amount of roast character coming through.
I mean, they are, but there's some sweetness to them.
Okay.
And that tends to make ameliorate that astringency and make it a little more. I keep saying all the time, it's like adding sugar to coffee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the coffee all of a sudden doesn't seem quite so
bitter.
Bitter, right, yeah. You know, and it tends to make that roastiness into kind of like a chocolatiness. So same thing kind of on the foreign extra stout. So in this recipe, all these, are designed for, you know, your starting volume on a boil is like 7 gallons. You're evaporating about 15% an hour. You're going to end up with a 6 gallons in the kettle. You rack 5.5 of that to your fermenter, and then you end up with 5 gallons of finished beer. That's how I do all my recipes. Original gravity is going to be about 1071.
Wow.
It'll be 1075 once you add the fruit. Finishing gravity is going to be about 1018. And it's going to have about 38 IBUs. Color is going to be about 3940 SRM. It's going to have about 7.6% alcohol by volume. And this is going to use... if you're extract brewer, you can use English pale ale extract, the English malt extract. You can use about 10 pounds. If you're an all-grain brewer, you're going to, instead of that, you're going to use about 13.9 pounds of British Pale Ale malt and mash at 152 degrees or 67 degrees C.
Okay. just one quick question.
Mm-hmm.
The recipes that you do give, are these calculated at a certain mash efficiency?
70%.
70, okay.
Right.
I just want to make sure.
Good point. Yeah. And, you know, and me being the hoe that I am.
Yeah.
You find all these recipes in the upcoming book, Brewing Classic Styles.
By John Palmer. And I
actually have the title now. It's Brewing Classic Styles, 80 Award-Winning Beers Anyone Can Brew.
Nice.
Or 80 Award-Winning Styles, anyway, 80 Award-Winning Recipes Anyone Can Brew. Yes, by yours truly and John Rock Candy Palmer.
Nice.
And
when's that come out?
That'll be in stores.
Next year.
This fall. This fall. Yeah, no, I submitted the manuscript May 1st or 2nd, and it should be in stores this fall.
So I want a picture of you in like a carboy.
Doing what for a carboy? Fermenting the carboy?
Or laying back on your back like you did.
Enjoying the carboy?
Enjoy the carboy.
Oh, yeah. Me and the carboy together. I don't know. It'd have to be a big carboy.
Big
carboy. None of them little carboys. No, the better bottle not working for me. Yeah. I need like the full manly carboy. all right. So the other grains, you're going to have black roasted barley, 500 love. You're going to go with 3/4 pound or 340 grams. You're going to go with your crystal malt, crystal 40. I like to use 10 ounces or 284 grams. Crystal 80, 10 ounces or 284 grams. And then chocolate malt. A half pound or 227 grams.
Sounds like a good stout.
Yeah, it's and this the difference between like a dry stout and foreign extra stout is you can add a little bit of crystal malt to these.
And that's pretty much the difference is just crystal malts. Just to give a little sweetness.
No, is bigger. Dry stout's real low gravity and high bitterness, and this is kind of the reverse. Then you're going to add a half pound or 227 grams of that Hershey's cocoa powder. Last minute of the boil, you just toss it in right there at the end and kind of let it bubble around a little bit to kind of break up the clumps. Mm. Otherwise, it'll form like one big brick and like fall to the bottom.
Yeah.
So you need like a minute of a boil there. And then Kent Golding's hops. We're going to use at 5% alpha acid at 60 minutes. You're going to use 2.1 ounces or 60 grams. That's going to give you about 38.4 IBUs using the Rager formula. And you're going to use White Labs WLP013 London Ale yeast or the Y Yeast 1028 London Ale. Or you can use the dry yeast, the Dan Star Nottingham.
We'll do an okay
job with this.
What do you think about that Saffale too, the 04?
I think the Nottingham actually is a little more attenuative.
Oh, okay.
And in this beer, you need a little more attenuation, I think. So that's why we would go with the Dan Star on this, the Nottingham. You want to ferment this at about 67 degrees Fahrenheit or 19 degrees C. And when that initial fermentation begins to slow, you're going to, so the bulk of fermentation's done, and it's starting to slow down. You're getting into like the, one bubble every half a minute or three bubbles a minute. It's kind of starting to slow down. Mm. You still want some active yeast in there. But you go ahead and add your, sanitize another fermenter, add your cherry, 2 cans of the Oregon Fruit Puree cherry, add that to the fermenter. And then you rack your beer directly on there. Now, you want to pull a bunch of that chocolate with you.
You want the chocolate.
Yeah. At this point, as things are slowing down, there'd be some dead yeast on the bottom and stuff like that. And you try and leave that and the hot bits and all that crud behind. But suck a little bit of that chocolate with you. The more of the chocolate you bring along. And actually, as it's fermenting, there should be a considerable amount of chocolate in there.
Right.
It should be a thick brown color.
Right.
Throughout, and it's almost like a chocolate sludge in there as it's actively fermenting.
So where do you think the gravity is at this point when you're transferring, roughly?
Good question. The bulk of the fermentation's happened. It's probably around 10, 25.
Okay.
Definitely below 10:30.
10% to go, roughly.
Yeah.
Now, does that protect you transferring to a secondary? Because there's some CO2 still in solution? And
well, yeah, you'll get some CO2 coming out when you rack to secondary. I'm not too concerned about oxygen. I've heard other people doing crazy things, and I wouldn't go wild with it. I'd, rack gently.
Mm-hmm.
It'll generally be okay. If you want, you can go ahead and flood the carboy with some CO2. If you have a kegging system or whatever, you can put a wand down there. And I'm sure my friend from Chicago, Roskin, he would do
purge of the carboy CO2.
Yeah, he'd go through a whole bunch of CO2 and
sterile
sanitize.
Filtration.
He'd probably have it all sealed off and positive pressure.
Yeah.
The only person I still know that I would trust him to do my sanitizing for my batches.
Wow.
I would trust him to handle all the steps, and I would be sure there would be no contamination whatsoever.
Wow, that's a compliment.
Yeah, I don't know that I've come across anybody that I would say that of.
Wow.
Most people, they're a little too slovenly for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty picky, and I think he matches my. I've gotten great respect for his sanitizing. I think he went a little overboard on some stuff that didn't need to do, but I'd rather you err that way than
right.
I think he was making a little too much extra work for himself.
We can definitely argue sanitation's second to fermentation.
Right, or,
or first, for that matter.
Right.
One
or
of the
it's,
two.
It's, I always thought it's a really important part of fermentation.
Yeah.
Having
clean
it's
work.
It's like setting a proper environment, oxygen, sanitizing, healthy yeast, all that makes a big difference. All right, so you rack the beer on there, and then fermentation should pick up again, and the yeast is going to consume all the fructose that's in there in the fruit puree. And when you're done, carbonate that thing to about 2.5 volumes, and it should make a really nice specialty beer.
Now, does the fruit character go away over time? I mean, is it pretty rich up front, or does it mellow out after 3-4 months?
Yeah, that's a good question. I can't say one way or another which it will always, because it won't always do the same thing. It depends on the different beers. Now, some beers, if they don't finish out dry enough, sometimes some of the sweetness will fade, and then sweetness tends to kind of mask or muddy the fruit flavors. And as it dries out, the fruit seems to come out more.
Right.
Other beers, when it's already dry and all that, and you give it enough time, again, the fruit flavor can drop, especially the aromas. Aromas tend to, it's interesting about aromas. I think aromas of anything tend to kind of fade over time.
But bitterness changes too over time.
Oh, substantially.
So that could be... I mean, that might affect the balance of the fruit character later
right,
on, too.
Right, right. I tell you, if you get a beer and it's too bitter to start with, kill that moth.
I'm going to get this son of a bitch.
Little bastard. Coming through and screwing over in our show.
Okay, we're good.
I'm sure this is entertaining for the folks at home.
Please, we'll do take a break. Right. Break.
What was I saying? Oh, bitterness.
Bitterness, yes. Long overtime.
In just a few months, bitterness can drop substantially. You lose I used to know the numbers, and I cannot recall them exactly for the life of me now. But I think it's something like 8% of bitterness drops in like a month.
Wow.
And then you lose 50% of bitterness in like a year or 6 months or something. It's this huge number. And there was an ASBC paper, I'm pretty sure, that talked about bitterness levels dropping over time. And they measured, a couple of beers. And I'm sure, it varies depending on the beer. But I was surprised.
It's a lot.
It's a significant drop in bitterness. So if you have a beer that's really bitter, you can go
put it away
and store
it. Yeah.
And, the bitterness will drop and the beer will sweeten up a little bit.
That makes it challenging for breweries to even bottle an IPA. I would never want to bottle an IPA because of that.
Right. Well, that's sometimes you'll have a beer. I know for me, I'll have a beer. It wasn't exactly, didn't work out exactly as I wanted, and I'll, set it aside.
And all of a sudden.
Because I had nowhere to pour out my beer. Now I have Justin.
Yeah.
And
he's doing okay.
So now it doesn't you know, matter as much. But when I had nowhere to pour out my beer, I would set them aside, and you know, like 6 months later, I'd go, "What's this keg?" And I'd taste it. I'd go, "Oh, that's really good." And I'd bottle it up and enter it, and you know, it would do quite well.
Yeah.
And
then you wish you didn't give it away.
Yeah, well, see, yeah, now I'm giving the beer away. I'm
right.
You know, pouring it down Justin, and, you know, it doesn't do me any good anymore.
He's all smiles right now, too, looking at him.
I got one a couple weeks ago. He brought me a keg.
Which one?
Kolsch.
Oh, lucky you.
Well, it's a Kolsch I promised him, like,
a year ago,
back when, like, Dan Gordon was here. And,
oh, wow.
You know,
yeah.
I totally forgot about it. I came across this keg. I'm like, what's this keg? It says Kolsch on it. Oh, was I going to give this to Justin?
How was it?
It was nice.
Yeah.
It was really nice. It wasn't Jamil's best beers, but that's what I expect now. Like, I know that when Jamil brings me beer, it's because he thinks it sucks.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'll enjoy
pour it, out,
but
so.
He thinks it's terrible. So I never mind calling him. I think I wrote him an email. Hey, thanks for the beer. It's great. I think it's great. I also know it's not your best work.
Hey, I got a strategy for you. You should bottle up all the beer he donates and put your name on it.
And enter it. I do have a couple questions from the chat for you guys.
All right.
You ready for those?
Sure.
One is about it's about your robust porter recipe, and it does have to do with the show, because the person was thinking about taking your robust porter recipe and adding pumpkin spice to it. So, A, he was wondering, you know, does that then make it a specialty beer? And the other thing was he wanted to know your opinion about, would the spices just get overtaken by the roastiness of that recipe?
Those are two excellent questions. And the first answer, the first is that no, it'd be a spice herb vegetable beer, or actually a Christmas beer. They actually divided the spice herb vegetable into just spice herb vegetable and Christmas beers. I think it would fall under the Christmas beer category fairly well. So either one of those. And yeah, I think, you know, you're definitely going to have a battle on your hand with the roastiness, fighting those spice flavors, but you just need to up the spice flavor. And, you know, just, you know, there'll be a point where it's perfectly balanced, and that's what you want. You want people to taste a robust porter and then, you know, like a nice pumpkin spiciness that, you know, just marries with the beer. Doesn't overwhelm the beer, but, you know, kind of blends in the background, but you notice it, you know, just that right level where you go, yeah, I could drink 2 pints of this, versus most spice beers, and I think John said this on fruit beers.
Over top.
You know, it's like you can drink a little bit, and then you go, yeah, it's all right. But you wouldn't order 2 pints or 3 pints. The best beers, whatever style you're doing or style you're not doing, are the beers where you go, wow, you know, I'd drink 3 pints of that. I'd pay for, you know, can I buy 5 gallons of that? You know, that's the best beers. And then, you know, even with like a barley wine, you go, well, I'd drink four pints if it wouldn't kill me.
Yeah.
You know, it's so good.
You know, crawl home.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Okay, and then another question that came through, you guys had mentioned at the beginning of the show, you were talking about rye IPA, and then maybe if you used enough rye, it could be a specialty beer. So someone was asking, you know, how much rye keeps it a regular beer or makes
it
a specialty?
Well, you know, is the flavor really prominent?
Okay.
Then it's you know, more of a specialty. If the flavor's kind of a background note, then it's still an IPA.
Okay. That'll do it.
Cool.
Good show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. If you're listening live, you get another show coming up next. What are you guys doing right after this?
ESB. Okay. Extra Special Strong Bitter.
Okay. So quick break, and we'll come back with the next show. And those of you who are listening via archive, you get the ESB show in 2 weeks. You have to wait.
Ooh.
The beauty of listening live. Now, I wanted to ask, is this, are we looking at this as being our new official time? Is that what we're trying for now? Or are we still?
This is our new official time.
Okay.
This is our slot.
So Monday nights.
Come check out our slot.
It'll be one Monday a month from 7 to 9, and we'll just keep you posted.
There you go. Enjoy our slot. Our time slot, I mean.
Yeah.
Ooh. Good show, my brother.
Good show.
All right. Bruce Strong.
Bruce Strong, yeah.
The Jamil Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jamil to Jamil@thebrewingnetwork.com.